Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
Well, happy end of the year and happy Boxing Day.
Yes, here we go. Another full year under our belts. This is season four, and we are seasonal on this show. So here it is, the end of the year, Boxing Day, and planning for New Year's Eve.
Planning for New Year's Eve. This is community radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, our friends are. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Was a little kickoff for the New Year's from Ames artist Elizabeth Zimmerman. We're going to talk about bubbly today. And from our archives, from a show that we recorded way back in December 30th of 2014, here's a little bit about good things to toast with on New Year's Eve.
Today we're going to talk about the kinds of bubbly besides just champagne and what the differences are. And for this discussion, we have my good drinking buddy, Ann Kinzel, who's my neighbor, who happens to have a French mother and grew up a good bit in France and has some amusing champagne stories to tell us. So welcome, Ann.
Hey, welcome. Nothing better than talking about some mousseux, some champagne, some bubbly, whatever we want to call it.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it was because, as we all know, champagne can be quite expensive. And so for parties on New Year's, sometimes we don't get enough bubbly. So I was going to encourage other people to try other kinds of bubbly that are quite a bit less expensive. And we were going to talk about the differences and what some of them are with, say, cava or Prosecco. But first, let's start with Anne, and she's going to tell us about what method champenoise mean.
So champagne is sort of the top of the line of the bubbly drinks, and I think there's two reasons for that. One, it comes from a limited region of France called Champagne, about 90 miles north of Paris. And for a wine to be called Champagne, the grapes have to be grown there. So that limits your territory.
Called AOC?
Yes.
What's that stand for?
Appellation Originale Contrôlée.
Means the name of the origin is controlled.
Yes, so it has to come from that region. And then the second reason that champagne is expensive is because it's very labor intensive. Champagne has to be stored, and it has
in
to
the
be
bottle.
In the bottle. It has to be babied. You put grape juice in the bottle, if you will, and you add sugars and yeast. And you have to store that and turn it on a schedule by hand.
Per bottle.
So don't be surprised if that bottle's pretty pricey. It represents all that good labor.
And you were explaining to me about why you turn it, how you turn it, and what happens with the yeast. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Now, I'm no vintner, but I kind of grew up with this, and I've been down in some champagne caves and seen what happens. So they put the grape juice in the bottle, and they add some yeast and sugar, and then they go in, and they turn it. And each time it turns, it helps the yeast and
wait,
the sugar.
Wait, so the bottle is laid on its side, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
In these kind of A-frame sort of racks.
I've seen them. They're interesting looking.
Yes.
And ancient looking.
Very ancient looking. So it's down in these limestone caves, and it's all these racks. It's really impressive. And they turn them like a quarter turn. And as they do that, the sugar and the yeast rise to the top. And then when they get all the way up there, they have to take it out.
Oh, the top of the bottle. So they're laid kind of on their side, but with the top pointing up. So how do you get the yeast out of the bottle without losing the bubbles?
Well, there's two ways. What they do is they pop the temporary cork, okay? And at that point, sometimes in the cheaper wines, the less expensive champagnes, they actually kind of freeze the bottle. And then so they can just sort of plop out that yeast and sugar little mass. And the more expensive stuff, they actually pop the cork and it shoots out. I've not seen it done, but it sounds really cool.
Well, the shooting part we can imagine because that's what it does. So then they put in that big mushroom cork after they've taken the yeast out.
Yes. And then I think they let it rest a little bit longer.
And the wire and all the stuff that you have to take off of it is to keep it from
blowing up
before you want it to.
Or as the French say, that premature explosion of champagne.
Yeah. And what is the significance of the limestone caves? Temperature? Well,
probably temperature. It's very constant. And the region of Champagne is full of these limestone caves.
Naturally occurring.
Then. Absolutely.
Huh. So describe your experience of going there with your grandfather as a little girl.
Sure. My grandfather sold industrial things, and among them were like tracks for mini railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold these little mini tracks to these champagne, what they call houses in France. And so one day we got invited for a tour, and we got to go down in these limestone caves. They were enormous. You actually rode a little train to get around.
Oh, and that's where they had the tracks.
Yes. And the bottles, saw guys turning bottles. They all had, you know, like little labels on them saying when this lot had to be turned. And It was really impressive, and it was huge. I think it was Domaine Chandon, and it was quite the operation.
Well, that's a fun thing for a little girl to do with her grandfather.
Even got to taste a little champagne.
Of course. My son's father is French, and when his brother came over, when our son was born, the first thing they did was, you know, of course, crack a bottle, and they put it on the baby's tongue.
Oh, it seems much nicer than a cigar. I like that. I like that. So we can see why champagne is well loved, well tended, and it should be expensive. Lots of care goes into it.
Right. So if you're like me and you love the bubblies, and you know, like every once in a while there'll be some champagne in my life, but most of the time, like for example, if you're having a party and you don't want to buy, you know, 15 bottles of champagne, we've been exploring in Ames a lot of other bubbly alternatives. And what are some of your favorites?
Well, I really like Prosecco from Italy.
Me too.
And I like the Cavas from Spain.
Mm-hmm. And these are both bubbly and white. And you can readily find them anywhere from $10 to $20 as opposed to at least $50 to $100 for champagne.
Hmm.
So this makes it at least reasonable party material.
Sure. I think some of the Spanish ones can even drop a little bit lower than that, depending on the euro. But there's also a French, what we call crémant or mousseux.
Spell crémant.
C-R-E-M-A-N-T, which is how you can sell bubbly or sparkly wine in France where the grapes are not grown in Champagne.
Ah,
suspect that a lot of the French Crémant is probably sold in Europe and in France, and not so much
exported
in the export markets. Uh-huh.
Well, we do know for sure that you can buy cava and prosecco all over town. Really, the Hy-Vees both have it. Weedsfield has it. Cyclone Liquor has it. And there are multiple price ranges for it. And they're really quite yummy. They're not sweet.
No, I think that the cava is maybe...
Now, the cava is Spanish.
Yes. Is a little lighter, in a sense, than the prosecco.
I think usually it's quite bubbly.
Yeah.
Sometimes the prosecco, although it's bubbly, it seems to have smaller bubbles, maybe.
Yeah, I guess I'd say the prosecco is a little calmer. You can be a little bit more careful popping that cork. You're probably not going to get a missile going through the kitchen.
Oh, but that's the fun of it sometimes. Everybody screams.
Yeah.
There's something very celebratory about opening a bottle of bubbly. Mm-hmm. And the fact that so many people do it this time of year and probably never again throughout the whole year, or maybe perhaps for a wedding. It is definitely a cause to celebrate. Celebrate,
well, you
celebrate.
Know, people are now, I think, drinking more and more Proseccos in the summertime because it is light and kind of a fun summer drink. I'll drink a Prosecco anytime.
Yeah, I think we're seeing people drink more lightly bubbled wines mm-hmm. in the summer. So there's the Prosecco. There's also...
Which is Italian.
Which is Italian, yeah. There's also a wine from Portugal, which is very inexpensive, which is not really a bubbly, but it has just kind of a hint of bubbles, called Vinho Verde, or green wine.
That's true. And also I've seen some from South America as well, some Vinho Verde. And also, one thing that's become more and more popular are champagne or bubbly cocktails.
Yes.
Oh, wait, that with your eyebrows going up, it sounds like you speak from experience.
Sure. Yeah, I think that champagne lends itself to wonderful cocktails. I mean, if you think about it, it's sort of like a soda with taste. Huh?
Yeah, and I think the most famous one would be probably mimosas, which are, what is that with, is it orange juice? Is that what's a mimosa? Fresh orange juice and champagne or bubbly of any kind. Works yeah. well with the cava or prosecco.
Well, I was just reading for this New Year's a whole in the magazine Food and Wine. They had a whole section on champagne cocktails or bubbly wine cocktails. I think if you're going to make a cocktail out of bubbly wine, don't go buy a $60 bottle of champagne.
No, it's kind of a waste.
But you can make some wonderful cocktails with other spirits or liquors that really bring out the taste of the champagne and maybe lighten up mm-hmm. the flavor profile of the cocktail a little
well,
bit.
Well, now let's see. We had one last night, and it was lemon juice, maraschino liquor, which is, it has a cherry in it, but maraschino liquor is, I think, from Croatia, and it is cherry flavored, but not the kind of cherry that we're thinking about. It's a little sweet at all, and it's not red at all. It's actually clear. And then what else did we put in that?
There was some lemon juice.
Oh, and white Lillet, which is a French aperitif wine, and then the bubbly on top of it.
Yeah, it makes a delicious sort of lightly fruity. It's almost a bit warm, even though it's a cool drink. It had
it's a
really
New Year's
nice
Eve cocktail.
Yeah, it was
a
great
cocktail.
It was great.
And then champagne or any of the bubblies mix really well with almost any kind of fruit juice or champagne or bubbly with what's the blackcurrant liqueur?
Cassis, creme de cassis.
Creme de cassis, which is just slightly sweet. All kinds of possibilities there for fun mix-em-ups, good ways to celebrate. And do try some of these other bubblies. They're
California. A lot of the French champagne houses bought land in California in the 70s and 80s and produced their own version of champagne there, or bubbly. They're typically sort of in between the French champagnes price-wise and the Spanish cavas and mm-hmm. Italian proseccos.
Mm-hmm. And there's even a good, I guess you can't call it a champagne, but it's a Gruet, which is from New Mexico.
Yes, I've had that. Yeah, I was I have to admit, I was a little skeptical at first. You know, I've been to New Mexico. It didn't look like champagne country to me at all. But the Gruet is a really, really nice champagne. They have a rosé, I think. They have a dry one, and they have a semi-sweet.
They have a blanc de blanc, too. Yeah. Tell us what a blanc de blanc is.
Well, blanc de blanc means, in French, sort of white of whites. And it's a champagne that's made with only white grapes and only Chardonnay, generally. And oddly enough, you can make white champagne with red grapes.
And why isn't it pink then?
Well, I think it has to do with when they take out the skins.
Oh, so they don't use the skins.
Yes, and champagne is always a blended wine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're blending different grapes, the sugar, the yeast, and they're always trying to get what they call the perfect balance. The art of the vintner is the perfect balance in the champagne.
And you want to explain the different names for Brut, Extra Dry, Demi-Sec, the whole thing?
Well, extra dry is exactly what it says. Brut is kind of in between, and demi-sec, I think, is the sweetest, isn't it? I have to admit, that's something where I sort of like them all, so I don't really think about it. The only thing I don't like, to be honest, is I don't like the very sweet Asti Italian bubblies. I like that's just a little too sweet for me.
So depends on how sweet your sweet tooth is, I guess.
Well, everybody celebrates with a bubbly their own way, and it's nice that there's so many different tastes out there. Gather your friends and family and prepare to raise a glass.
Bring in the new year.
But don't stop yourself then. Bubbly's good all year round, folks.
Thanks, Anne. Yes. Yes. Excellent advice to live by. Yes, sirree. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are going to be celebrating the new year, and here is some good information for you today. Let's toast the new year.
Yes, with us we have Becca the bartender.
Hello.
Becca is a staff member at the radio show, and she's also the bartender at Plus 39.
Yes, that I am.
So you can tell us some tricks of the trade for New Year's.
I could certainly try. I think there's some exciting things that someone could consider if you're hosting a party. You might be really confused as to all the crazy options you have, and there are a lot of options.
Yeah, you can do just about anything.
And, yeah, the piece that we just heard talked a lot about champagne and Prosecco and the other options. A lot of the cocktails tend to involve Prosecco just because it's a tad bit sweeter. It brings out some of the flavors of other liqueurs.
Well, plus, you're working in an Italian restaurant. So.
Yeah. So I've sort of divided up. I thought about, you know, the meal that one might be, you know, having on any sort of day during the winter holidays. And so got you divided up. Pre-meal, during the meal, and after meal. So before the meal, also known as aperitifs, pair of tips. However, you kind of want
aperitif.
Yeah, I am not like French,
that.
So
apéro. That's what Anne is always calling it.
There you go. Aperol spritz is a pretty awesome drink to start the night off.
Right. Aperol is it's a red bitters.
Mm-hmm. It's
kind of like Campari, but it's a little bit lighter.
Yeah, it is in the Amaro family. It's Campari's less bitter cousin, so kind of the sweetheart of the family, if you want to say. Mm-hmm. Just throw in equal parts of Aperol and Prosecco with a splash of soda if you want. I'm personally not a huge fan of splashes of soda because I prefer mine mean and
undiluted. Yeah. And also, supposedly Campari and Aperol, since they're bitters, help you to digest the coming meal.
Yeah, so when
you're a good excuse.
I know. When you're looking at Amaros, so Amaro is not quite like your whiskeys where there's these clear definitions, like anything slightly bitter could be an Amaro. So they say that the darker the Amaro, that is preferred for digestives. And yeah, I've got a little bit about digestives later. Another fun little bubbly cocktail would be the Italian 77.
We're still pre-dinner here.
So we're just given a bunch of options. Saint Germain is an elderflower liqueur.
Wait, these are the ingredients.
These are the ingredients. So this
what's
is
it called,
just
the Italian 77?
Italian 77. Okay. So throw together equal parts Saint Germain and Prosecco, though I would aim for a drier Prosecco. Saint Germain is really quite sweet.
I would do maybe less Saint Germain than Prosecco.
And everyone has different taste buds, so if you prefer like really crazy sweet, go for it.
Right.
But if you don't,
it is a delightful flavor,
though.
It's
so fun.
It's a very popular cocktail ingredient. Mm-hmm. And it's a relatively new liquor on the scene, maybe 10 years at the most.
Ooh,
oh,
nice.
Yeah. It's not one of those old ones.
Another thing I just thought of with when I make my Aperol spritzes at home, I nix the soda, but I throw in a dash or two of orange bitters. It really brings out that orange flavor a little bit.
I also tend to just to squeeze a lemon sometimes,
too. When you're looking up recipes and you find lemon or lime juice for the holidays, just get your fresh lemon and lime juice.
Oh, please. Absolutely.
It's the skins, like, will do something special to your cocktails, and it's different.
I am totally not in favor of any sort of reconstituted citrus. It completely changes.
A lot of times they may add sugar, and you don't want that.
Well, bottled lemon is not the same as fresh lemon. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Or lime, or any of those things. I'm with you. A good bar
especially
always
orange
uses
juice.
Fresh citrus is important.
And for another pre-meal cocktail, I just want to throw in my heart and soul, the Wisconsin Old Fashioned.
Oh, what do you make it with?
Okay, a regular Old Fashioned, you will take some sugar, throw in a couple of bitters, like one or two. You're going to dilute that sugar a little bit, muddle it. You get your orange peel in there, muddle your orange peel. You put a big rocks glass. And then you pour the whiskey over the giant rack. Now, for a Wisconsin Old Fashioned, it's a little bit crazier. So you throw in like 3 orange slices, a couple of cherries, maraschino cherries, muddle it. And
muddling is when you
squish it.
Pound it.
If you don't have a muddler, I have gotten success from a pestle, from a mortar and pestle.
Yeah, just don't break
the
glass.
Just don't break the glass.
Yeah.
And we're not talking like 2 or 3 dashes of orange bitters. We're talking about 10 dashes of orange
Woo-hoo!
Bitters. You're using...
What brand do you like to use for the orange bitters? Do you know what they have?
I don't know the name of it. It's the one with the paper
label. Paper covering on the bottle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, so a bunch of orange bitters. You're going to not use a single rock. You're going to use ice cubes. Tend to use brandy. E&J brandy is typical.
So it's a brandy.
Mm-hmm.
Aha.
And then you top it off with soda. Sprite or 7-Up. If you want yours a little stronger, less soda, definitely. You can easily dilute. Recently, and by recently, I mean like a month or two ago. But someone from Wisconsin came into the restaurant and wanted, she was looking through the list and ordered an old fashioned. And I asked her, well, do you want a normal one or a Wisconsin old? And she got really excited and said Wisconsin. And I got really excited because Cedar Ridge has an apple brandy that
yes,
she said
do.
Worked really well. Like
wow.
She really liked it.
What a great
yeah.
idea. Cedar Ridge
that.
Is an Iowa distillery. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I just want to throw a quick tiny rant about martinis. Martinis have vermouth. That's what makes them a martini. So if you don't want vermouth in your martini, you're not actually ordering a martini.
No. Like, I'm with you on that one. Of course, I love vermouths, but...
Yeah, and that's fine. And actually, vermouth is technically an Amaro, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Oh. So.
Or some... Yes, comes from that tradition.
All right, so now we're heading into the main course. And don't be deterred by, like, wine and your meal. If you're... Don't think too much about the flavors if you're a newbie. It's okay. Just match the colors. So if you're having, say, fish, white wine, pork, rosé or white, same with fish, rosé or white, anything meaty and heavy, go with red. And of course, you know, within those, there's all sorts of variety. But a really good book for anyone is called The Wine Folly. She's a graphic designer and a master sommelier, and her book breaks everything down so simply. Not it doesn't oversimplify everything, but so if anyone needs
The Wine Folly.
Yeah, F O L L Y.
Ooh.
All right. And then I just wanted to mention some whiskey, just to help clear up any confusion if you are concerned. If you got a snob in the family, don't worry.
Okay.
So just think bourbon is sweeter. Tends to be sweeter. And from America. Scotch is from Scotland. It's whiskey without the E, and they tend to be woody, earthy, so.
Smoky.
Yeah, you know, depending.
Oh, that's right. Whiskey without the E.
Yeah,
that's
yep.
right.
Well.
Rye is Canadian, and it's really good for, like, novices. So if you want to get into whiskey, but you're not really sure, just, like, try a rye, see where it takes you. You know, everyone's a little bit different. And then Irish whiskey tends to be, like, it's not as sweet as bourbons, maybe a bit more peaty. I really like Irish whiskey and sours, like a whiskey sour. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an old drink.
Yeah. All right. And then a little bit on digestive. So after the meal, everyone's full and got some food babies going on. Digestives, so the bitterness of... Like Amaros will stimulate digestive enzymes. So fun fact about Fernet, it survived Prohibition because it was labeled as a medicinal.
Yes, this is she's talking about Fernet Branca, which is It's you gotta be ready for it.
You do have to be ready for
it's
it.
Very
if you
special.
Really want to play a prank on someone, yeah. just give them a shot.
Although
Fernet.
I had some South American friends and they drink Fernet Branca mixed with Coke.
Mm, yep.
And when you mix it like that, it doesn't have that huge medicinal whack.
Fernet Blanc with Mexican Coke is even better.
Yeah.
Way better. And if you want to, like, muddle a cherry or, you know, like, don't be afraid of muddling. Just go for it.
Huh?
What? So they're after dinner. They can be mixed with – you typically drink a digestive –
Neat.
You
can
do
up.
It. Yeah. You can do it on ice, on the rocks, or in coffee, like if you have Sambuca.
Mm. Right. Don't put the Fernet Branca in the coffee. I don't think so.
No, I don't see that. Unless you throw in like chocolate milk or something. That might be interesting.
I don't know. Mm. That would
or in a cocktail.
Whew. Yeah. Well, I make small samples before I serve that to anybody.
Oh, yeah. And feel free to experiment before your holidays, too.
Right.
And then, you know, other post-meal cocktails may include Irish coffee, which is coffee with whiskey.
And that's really good.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh,
maybe whipped cream, but that's up to you.
Okay. You pour the coffee, add the
whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there you go.
And put the
just a standard
the whip,
shot.
Whip yeah. the whipped cream on.
I'm not a huge fan of whipped creams. I just like my I'm hot toddies. So hot toddy. This is a hot toddy.
Hot toddies are good all winter long.
All winter long. All right, so you find your tea, whatever tea you like. I'm trying to develop like a bit more of an experiment where I experiment with different whiskeys and different teas because I believe that works. All right, so make your tea, shot of whiskey, a little bit of honey or something sugary. So if you got like a simple syrup or like a fancy simple syrup, go for it. And half a lemon, juice from half a lemon. Huh? And that's it.
That sounds awfully good for you. Do you make the tea extra strong or just regular tea?
I think extra strong should be considered because then you are getting the flavors of everything. You know, you're not trying to escape the flavors. You're trying to enhance them and make a story.
And also, if you want, like, the hot toddy is always a good excuse when you have a cold. Oh, I should have a hot toddy. And often you may not want the caffeine because you're trying to, like, calm yourself down and knock yourself out. So you can just do the lemon juice and the whiskey and any kind of add.
Hot water.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or even a little fruit juice, stuff like that.
I had hot toddies when I was growing up. And sick.
Yeah, I did too.
Irish, growing up in an Irish family. Yeah.
Right. Yes, you couldn't occasionally whiskey has been given to children when you want to knock them out.
A little bit of warm brandy and Vicks. Not together, but Vicks and then the warm brandy. And boy, that pretty much took care of any winter cold.
That's right.
Oh, I have a question. Is there butter in hot buttered rum?
Probably. Probably not, but I actually have no idea.
Oh, I remember that.
Reminds me of mulling.
Yeah,
mulling is a thing.
Mulling things.
Sweet red wine and then spices.
Not that. Yeah. That's a very good Christmas thing. Oh, very good things here. I liked your talk about martinis, too. Martinis on the rocks, martinis not on the rocks. Shaken, stirred, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I like the stories, the science, the celebratory.
The James Bond-ness of the,
It is. It's good. And also the ritual that goes into making these things. It's passed on, and it's made to share. It's one of these,
What I like about it is, you can create a recipe, because a cocktail really is a recipe, but you don't have to do any prep work. You're just pouring bottles, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have to slice the onions. You don't have to do any of those things. So you can get quite creative, and it is a pleasure, and I think we're having a little renaissance of all of that, because it's unlimited possibilities. You do not have to be a genius or wildly experienced to create your own cocktails.
That's true. You can have a good time. Or you can have somebody like Becca make it for you. Becca, do you find out that this time of year people are asking for some rather more seasonal, strange things than they normally do?
Celebratory drinks.
Yeah. Not really, actually. It's kind of weird.
People do have drinking habits, right?
Oh, yeah. It definitely changes. Like, I worked at a winery before I came back to Ames, and the colder the weather, the redder the wine, definitely.
Harder, deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, people like a nice, crisp drink during the summertime. Not as many cocktails going on right now. Definitely a lot more hot toddies and some of the things that kind of warm up your soul a little bit.
Oh, that's good. Talking about warming up our soul, we're thinking ahead to the New Year's and what we can raise our glasses with.
I have a plus 31 question. Do you guys make your own limoncello, don't you?
Yes, we do. So I don't know if we can talk to –
Well, I know they use
the recipe. The
person who made it once told me they just use an Everclear base. So it's Everclear and sugar and lemons, but and not just the juice, the whole
thing,
I think, right?
Just rinds.
Just the rinds. Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
You let it sit for a couple months.
In the pantry, and then you take it out and strain it off, right?
So. And that's limoncello.
Yeah.
Limoncello.
You can probably make an interesting Italian 77 with limoncello. Substitute the limoncello for the Saint Germain. That might be interesting.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Again, I would do a drier bubble because limoncello can be pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, it's pretty
sugary.
And
you can buy limoncello like at Cyclone Liquor.
Oh yeah, there's quite a lot of limoncellos around. But it's a fun thing to make yourself. A little planning ahead, but
oh yeah, 2 months.
And do use organic lemons because you don't need all the pesticides in mm-hmm. the vodka.
Okay,
and the
Everclear, wash
your lemons, as
too.
It were.
You want to be healthy about this whole thing. Yes, you do.
Sure.
This is KHOI. This is Community Radio. If you want to find out more about the Donalana Kitchen, if you want to find out more about this fine community radio station, go to the website, khoifm.org. Yes, a jig. That's a jig from a band named Bohola.
Yeah, you can tell what Lana does on New Year's Eve. She jigs.
You dance.
After
you
a couple hot toddies,
she
right?
She jigs, yeah.
It's hard to drink and dance at the same time. I don't really do that.
That's why you drink first and then
drink
you dance.
Drink first, yeah. Oh. That's fine. We're talking about good things to fill your glass with and bubbly and good things. And, well, we have a topic that we have not covered yet, and we have someone to tell us about that. Evan Taylor. Evan Taylor's in our studio today. He probably has a holiday beer suggestion.
Right. Beers have bubbles, Evan, right?
That's right. Last I checked, they are, in fact, carbonated. So beers do have bubbles. Now, for my money anyway, especially in this sort of middle of winter kind of period, end of December, early January, I really enjoy a nice winter ale. or sometimes it is called a winter warmer.
What characterizes a winter ale?
Okay, so winter ales, picture sort of a medium-bodied ale that has...
What color are they?
Anywhere from kind of a rusty red to pitch black, depending on what you're doing.
Okay, I mean, okay.
What it is usually you have kind of a sort of your base ale recipe.
So
and,
they're thick as me mither's milk.
Not necessarily. No, you're thinking more of stouts and porters.
Okay.
In this case, you know, it stays pretty relatively medium-bodied. Some of them get to a thicker medium, but none
but
of them
dark.
Are too terribly heavy. Some of them are.
Okay.
But anyway, you kind of have they tend to be very malty, sweet, sort of a darker malt than a typical ale might be. So the malt.
But for the winter, are you choosing these because they have a little stick to the ribs kind of quality to them?
I am choosing them because most of the winter ales tend to have more of a boozy flavor to them.
Oh.
They seem to strike the palate a little bit harder in that sense, not necessarily in the actual body.
Give me some examples of a name or a brand now, because I want to taste these.
Okay. Old Fezziwig by Samuel Adams is a good example.
And that's something one could find easily in town.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Old Fezziwig. Okay.
The Jubilee by Deschutes is another one that I really like. I mean... let's see. What's another good one that I like?
So would you be drinking these on New Year's Eve?
I would. I'm not everybody, but that's what I like to do.
Not
as much of a champagne person. Another good one that I particularly like is the Nutcracker Winter Warmer Ale. That's by Boulevard, so just down in Kansas City.
Oh, I've seen that one, right.
Odell Isolation Ale is another good example. But what I really like about them is while the malt is kind of the star of the show, the hops are still there and they're still very present, just not necessarily bitter. You know, not nearly as bitter or as front and center as in like a pale ale, for instance. But they're very leveled, they're balanced, and they are pronounced. Again, there is this sort of this booziness to it. A lot of winter ales can be barrel aged, depending on which breweries are doing special seasonals and special batches. But
like for example, they might have a barrel aged one down at the Mucky Duck.
They very well could.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
we'll have to call up and ask what they're cracking open these days.
Certainly, and I know that there are a couple at London. That
have London Underground, that have some similar barrel-aged ones, too.
There's one that I tried the other week. I want to say it's called Very Bad Elf is what it was called. And that one was really good. I mean, it was...
And where did they have that? At the London Underground?
At London Underground, yeah.
Okay.
In bottles.
Okay.
And that one, I believe, was barrel-aged, and it was a... it was kind of a boozy red ale. I mean, like I said, these can range from red to quite dark and still be considered winter ales. They're very good.
I just had one called Celebrator. It's got a goat necklace on it at the London Underground.
It's got a what?
It has like a goat necklace. It's a little string. It has a kind of looks like an ornament of a goat. Celebrator.
Oh, on the label. Okay.
On
the bottle.
It's like a little necklace. It's really good. It's dark.
Oh, my
goodness. It's sweet and malty. That one was good, too.
I've got the name of that now. It's actually called Insanely Bad Elf, and that was by Ridgeway Brewing Company. And it was a 2016 vintage, so it was one that they even...
Oh, they date and vintage them.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can actually... these winter ales lend themselves pretty well to cellaring, actually.
Oh. Well, now, are they aged in the barrel, or they're barreled and then put in the bottle and then cellared?
Some of them are aged in barrels before being bottled. I think this one went straight to bottle, and then the bottle was cellared for about a year.
Hope they didn't have to turn it like the champagne.
I don't think it's quite that tedious. Usually you can just, as long as you're keeping it in a relatively climate-controlled area and you're keeping it out of direct light, you can just have them sitting on their sitting down as normal while you're cellaring them. That one's really good because it lets the malt characteristics and the grains develop a little bit more. Cellaring is especially good for... for beers that aren't super duper hoppy. So you wouldn't necessarily want to do an IPA, for instance. You can, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Does not improve, yeah.
Doesn't necessarily improve. You're losing a lot of the freshness of the hops, whereas these where the hops are, again, just present but not predominant, really deepens the flavor.
A lot of wine rules that seem to go along with it. Same Indeed. Thing with wine. Don't age your white wines. There's only like a couple that do that. Also, mm-hmm. don't forget to put your wines on the side if you're not going to drink them right away.
Lay them on the Indeed. Side. Yeah, that's what she means.
Make sure they touch the
bottom. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, what?
Otherwise, your cork's going to dry out and then fall into the wine, and then you're going to get a wet newspaper or wet dog taste/smell.
Oh,
I don't know if that's icky. The same with beer, but...
Ah. Well, since beer doesn't usually have corks, it's not as bad. But if you're laying it on the side as opposed to having it sit down, just sit up basically the normal way, you run the risk of oxidizing the metal on your bottle cap, which, I mean...
right. Okay, so stand your beer up and lay your wine down
that's
on the
right.
side. Okay.
I feel like there's a bad joke in there somewhere.
Yeah, right. We'll leave that to the audience to ponder.
Ah, very good. Very good. So I'm going to try some of these aperitifs. Well, I'm going to try the beer because I'm a beer sort of person, too. But the aperitifs and the bitter things, I have a lot of exploring to do.
Oh, yeah. And you know, if you're ever having an upset tummy or if you just don't know what you want to drink, a lot of the times just something really crazy bitter, something in the digestive category will kind of cleanse your tummy and your palate.
But it actually
gets
does work, the bitterness.
London Underground has this... little bottle. It's about probably 3 inches tall, and it's an Amaro. I think it's an Amaro. It's definitely bitter. It's not as bitter as Fernet, but it's meant to be slurped back. Like, they put a little straw in there.
What is it?
I don't remember for the life of me, but if you go there...
just say, Becca sent me to try this unknown small bottle, whatever it is, right?
Kyle was working. He'll probably know what it is, but it's just this tiny little bottle. It's really bitter. It's dark. It's meant to be like one sip. You will drink the whole bottle. And
it's not Jägermeister.
No. Although technically Jägermeister is an Amaro.
Yeah, not my favorite. I have to say there are not many things
either.
I don't like, but that could be one of them.
Huh? Yeah. See, the whole world of taste sensations here, and we've got a whole new year just to celebrate this sort of thing in. Well, now, we're coming to the end of the year here, and usually major news organizations look back on the year.
Yes, the 10 best blah blahs.
Yeah, right. We're not going to do that here, but occasionally we have news items here on the Dunalana Kitchen, and... it hasn't been really the year to celebrate as far as news is concerned. We do bummer news, and that seems to show up a lot. And sometimes we do funny news. But here's something that I found that sort of kind of sums up the whole year. And I can't remember where I saw this. I saw it as a bumper sticker, really, truly. About 2 months ago I saw this. Now, I don't know whether I saw it as a picture of a bumper sticker someplace or in a catalog. But here's the bumper sticker, and it does sort of sum up the year. Super callous, fragile ego. Trump, he is atrocious. Super califragilego, Trump, he is atrocious. Now, I always
like... That's political, Lana.
I always like Mary Poppins. I think that's a lovely little takeoff on one of my favorite musicals. And it does sort of like sum things up. Because this is radio, you can't have a bumper... You can't see this bumper sticker. But it happened to me. I saw this... and that little phrase has been going around in my ears for a long time.
Stuck in your brain, yes.
So here is a end-of-the-year bumper sticker for your ears from me to you from the Dunalana Kitchen. Yes, it is. Thanks to Becca and Evan for being with us today. Cheers. We heard from Ann Kinzel, too, all about champagne. We've learned lots of things about bubbly for the new year. Thank you. Thank you.
Happy New Year, and do make merry. No matter what's going on, there are many things to celebrate. We are alive. We live in a charming environment in many ways, even though it's changing. Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year. And we'll go out with a little bit more music from Bohola. We had music today by Elizabeth Zimmerman. Thanks to you, to all of you.
Yes, have a New Year jig.
Yeah. No, this is a lovely, lovely sort of ballad here. So I thought something about sailing ships, about longing, and yeah, that sort of thing. This is called Storms Out on the Ocean. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks to all of you who listen to us. You can find us live here on KHOI. You can download, you can podcast us. Thanks to all of you. Support this fine radio station. Fine holiday wishes from us all. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Thanks to Evan Taylor for fine engineering all year. Happy New Year. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Now who's going to shoe your pretty little feet? And who's going to glove up your hand? Who's going to kiss your red rosy lips while I'm in a foreign land? The storms are on the ocean and the heavens may cease to be. This world will lose its motion, love, if April falls to thee. Well, Papa will shoe my pretty little feet, and Mama will glove my hand, and no one will kiss my red rosy lips while you're in a foreign land. The storms are on the ocean and the heavens may cease to be. This world lose its motion, love, if I the storms are on the ocean, and the heavens may cease to be, this world will lose its motion, love, if I